Cool box. Cool box.
It's going to make millions.
Here we go.
Release it. Are we rolling now?
We're rolling.
Yeah, we're rolling, baby.
Oh, I'm rolling, baby.
All right, so I can't just say things that I wouldn't say if we weren't rolling. If we were rolling.
I'd say it, and there's always the magic.
I've got a delay.
You've got a delay.
I'm good. Let's roll.
Okay. Oh.
As long as I know that it's normal.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You okay, should be
already,
on the right ear.
Yeah, it is. It is okay. The right ear.
Okay,
yeah.
And I should be in your left ear.
It's not my best ear.
Is that right? That's why I gave you the right ear.
Actually,
you can turn the headset around and it will just go in your left ear. So it really doesn't make any difference.
Overcoming technological barriers. But there's a reason. The reason for that.
Now, is
I'm going to talk about my biology. Here
I'm already bored.
Right? I'm sorry.
Now, wait a minute. Hold on. You're going to talk about your biology now?
Yeah, just for a second.
And
there's a cultural piece to this.
Is there?
Yes, there is.
What a surprise! and okay, now what are you doing? Go talk.
Yeah, well, I asked if the delay on my headset was on my right ear, and you said you could turn it around, but my right ear, the right side is my weaker side.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah. My left hand is so much stronger than my right hand, if somebody stands behind me and gives me a push, my left foot is going to go out, not my right foot. First, which indicates whether I'm really lefty or righty. And so somebody told me. And it's my left side that is dominant. But I write with my right hand. So I'm wondering if I wasn't like one of those people who was trained to use my right, even though I was inclined to use my left.
I'm sorry. I got lost in the middle of all of that.
Boredom. No need to apologize. But, you know, that's the basis in many cultures for the need to use the right hand and not the left hand.
Well, we're really treading in dangerous territory, I have a feeling, but go ahead.
Well, you know, for example, in Saudi and in many Arab cultures, the right hand is the hand that's used for passing important documents, passing food, touching people, because the left hand is considered unclean. Because
for real reasons.
Well, back in the day, before modern plumbing, basically you use your left hand for personal hygiene.
And, I think we discussed this early on in the podcast, the life of the podcast, actually.
And that's one of the reasons why the left is considered not as good as the right in many of these cultures. They'll raise their kids who show a left-handed inclination to use their right hands, right? Right? It's also the reason why staircases in medieval castles in Europe go in a counterclockwise direction.
It's common for staircases anywhere to go in a counterclockwise.
Because 80% of the population is right-handed. Mm-hmm. And in those days, if you were the knight defending the castle and somebody was attacking the castle, 80% of the people who were attacking the castle would be attacking it holding the lance in their right, under their right arm.
Or their sword in their right hand.
Or their sword, right. So as they go up the steps, they're going to approach you with the lance in the right side. So if the steps are going up in a counterclockwise direction, you, if you're one of the 80%, with your sword and lance at the top, can kill him.
What if you're farther up the stairs, fighting down the stairs?
Oh, then you're screwed.
You're in trouble. Yeah.
Okay. Then you got to call in the lefties.
Call in the lefties.
Yes. Oh, hold on, please. We're going to bring in Lefty.
And do you
to
know
fight
why
you
we're?
Now.
Do you know why we're talking about this?
I have no
because,
idea.
Because,
oops, your culture's showing. So, last I knew, you were Dean Foster. Are you still Dean Foster?
Last time I checked, yep.
Okay, good.
And happily so, I have to add.
Is that right?
Yeah.
All right.
You know, sometimes, I'm sure this is a common human condition. You know, sometimes we're not happy being who we become, who we think we are, right? You wake up in the morning and it's like, oh, it's me again, you know? And then other times, I think we all feel pretty good about ourselves. Well, not maybe all of us, but, you know, we're on a spectrum. Sometimes we're happy, sometimes we're sad. That sounds like a song, right?
I'm just really confused right now. And, also, I'm happy that my supportive co-host for this podcast ignored me and my name.
No, and I'm about to say, and not only are you happy.
Am I?
But, and you're Tom Peterson.
Oh, because I'm not one of the seven dwarfs, right?
I'd rather be happy than sneezy, right?
Yeah, or grumpy, for that matter. Although my wife tells me I'm grumpy most of the time anyhow, so...
I think it's easier to be grumpy than sneezy.
Yeah, that's like a medical condition, right?
Right, right.
I think
well,
the worst would
be
bashful,
medical condition too, right?
I wouldn't want to be bashful. That's tough. That's really tough.
Yeah.
And Torin's with us today.
Torin is with us today.
Hey,
yes.
Torin.
In studio. Hello.
Yes, I am in on studio.
Mm-hmm. Or whatever that goes. Yeah.
French, no.
No.
Not even close.
Nope. So, good. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
I guess. We'll see how it goes.
Oh, wow.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Not much trust.
No, well, you got
no. It's good to have
both sides of the fence, you know.
Storin isn't always here, but right. Yeah, I know he right. tries
and sometimes
to be
he's
here.
Phoning it in, and sometimes
literally.
He's here. Yeah, yep.
I know he tries to be here.
Yes,
I do.
He does.
But
try
I'm
a little
here.
Harder.
Kind of a pathetic
yeah,
effort,
well,
but nonetheless,
well, he so, would be yeah. more successful.
Yeah. Probably would be. Most of the blame onto him.
What's happening?
So. Today,
in
we're
oops,
actually...
where culture's showing, yeah. What do we talk about?
Well, I don't know. You seem to have hijacked the subject into being your right side being inadequate, which I did read, I
it
believe,
depends
in a,
on
in
who
a
you
men's
talk
room
to,
somewhere,
buddy.
But, yeah, no, thank you. we... So I thought, given the fact that we did an island hopping episode a while back.
Yes, we went from Iceland to
the
UK to many other, many
yes,
islands.
Malta, didn't
Malta,
we?
Malta, right? Yes. Right. Yes, we discussed Maltese.
That's why I'm here, to remember what we've been talking about. and it's getting harder and harder, actually. Well, for a variety of reasons, but... There is more podcasts to remember. Let's go with that. Yeah, that's it.
Torin, that's one of the reasons why you're so essential. We need you to keep track of this. You
right,
know?
Absolutely. Right. Yes. Yes.
I will do my best.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, we'll blame you.
He's furiously
yes,
writing
as
this
do.
Down. He's cataloging this. He's curating
he
every detail.
The podcast. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sure. For the, I'm sure, for the library that will be opened
yes.
in the name of this podcast.
Library of. Your culture show.
You're right. And probably other
right
things,
next to
too.
The Library of Congress.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yes. well, anyway, with this island hopping episode,
right.
I thought we might hop a few more islands, and we might start with one that you visited not all that long ago.
Which is that?
And you have referenced a few times along the way, but that would be New Zealand.
That's right. That's right. I had a remarkable experience. Was it just last year, not too many months ago, doing some work in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And...
Well, that's all the time we have. We'll be moving. No, go right ahead. It's...
Yeah, so I had the privilege to spend quite a lot of time down in both the North and the South Island in New Zealand. And it was, for me, it was remarkable. It was the first time, actually, that I had visited New Zealand in all the many years of the work that I've done. But, off I went. And, you know, one of the things about that struck me. It's a very progressive country, by the way. They are doing things that they're not even on the radar in our country here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. In terms of everything from ecology to dealing with climate change to dealing with, well, just think about how they dealt with the recent terrorist attack that occurred there. I think it was in Christchurch.
Yes, it was.
It was so remarkably, such a remarkably civilized response to a horror, and it was such a different response to some of the similar kinds of things that happened in other parts of the world.
Yes.
In any event, I was struck by their progressivism and many other aspects of life there. And one of the things that that I noticed was, you have the North Island where most of the population is, and that's where the big city of Auckland is. That's the commercial center. And in fact, that's where I did most of my work when I went there. But then you have the capital itself, which is the entranceway to the South Island, mm-hmm. and that's Wellington, and a completely different vibe. And you go to the South Island, and oh, man, it's not as populated. And in fact, I had such a case of, what's the word when you're out in the middle of nowhere and you start to freak out a little bit because there's nobody around for as far as you can see.
Scaredy cat?
Scaredy cat. That was it. I had the scaredy cat syndrome.
Agoraphobia?
Oh, right.
So, what was it? What was
agoraphobia?
Agoraphobia? No, that's when you're afraid of... No.
Fear of
spiders.
Sweaters, I think.
Yes, fear of sweaters.
Or that's angoraphobia.
Yes, that's it.
I don't know how anybody could have a phobia against angora sweaters.
No, I don't think so.
I'll tell you where my phobia of angora sweaters came from another day. But
philia, yes, but phobia? No, I don't think so. Angoraphilia, yeah.
Oh, my.
You're overwhelmed by the large space.
The large space, that's
large
right.
Large space, sure. Right. That's yeah. It.
So
we'll go with it.
You know, the landscape
don't
is...
look it up or anything. We'll be fine.
It's correct.
It is agoraphobia. Arachnophobia was the fear of spiders.
That's fear of spiders, right. Definitely.
And,
yes.
And we should talk about like all the possible phobias.
We should, but anyway, not today.
Not today. So in the South Island, the natural landscape is something that I've never experienced.
Uh-huh.
It pales, the Rocky Mountains pale in comparison to the Transalpine range in the South Island.
Okay.
And because the population is so much less, you really feel that you are not just out in nature, but you are abandoned to nature. And it was a remarkable experience. Anyway.
Well, I think pardon me, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, but...
Go back to one of the past podcast, and you will catch up with that. My understanding of New Zealand is limited. I've never been there, and it's limited to the Lord of the Rings movies.
That's right,
and the spectacular footage used in that for. And this may be in the area you're talking about.
Well, I can tell you that you don't have to do computer graphic. Design.
And they didn't. They used
you don't
that.
Have to. It's like that.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
And because it's an island that's been, like many islands, uniquely separated from the rest of the world, the flora and the fauna that evolved there over the centuries, the millennia, are completely different. So, you have the kiwi bird, which doesn't exist anywhere else.
Mm.
By the way, the kiwi bird lays the largest egg of any bird in the world relative to its size.
Relative to its size,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. So
well, that's interesting.
When the egg is inside the kiwi, mm-hmm. it's actually twice the size of the kiwi itself.
So, I'm sorry, I'm not really laughing at all the kiwis out there listening.
No, the bird.
By that, I mean the actual bird.
The bird, not the nickname for residents of New Zealand.
Yes. Right. But...
Now, the last part was a figment of my imagination.
Oh, good.
But it is the largest egg.
I was getting a visualization that was quite odd. And I was really hoping you were talking about the bird and not the residents of New Zealand.
Now, I don't know about the residents, but that's
okay,
the bird.
Well, we won't mean to speak for them.
Anyway, there are these pine trees and ferns that grow like... To me, it seemed like they were growing hundreds of feet into the air.
Mm, maybe they were.
And maybe they were. It was astounding.
Yeah.
The natural landscape in the South Island was astounding.
Huh.
Anyway, in the South Island, people visit, not only for to see the nature, but it's also become a tourist destination for extreme adventures mm-hmm. and extreme sporting adventures. So I think it was Queenstown. Yeah, you go to Queenstown, and everybody who goes to Queenstown seems to go there. And by the way, it's a gorgeous place. I mean, there's a harbor and the mountains behind it. It's crazy beautiful. But the tourist business there is all about giving people as an extreme experience as possible.
Mm.
You know, so that's where bungee jumping started.
Mm, okay.
Right? They mm-hmm. they did it. They strung this big rubber band and it went all the way down into the chasm and people just like jumped off the edge and you jump down and you fly into the sky again.
Do they have a monument there to the first person who did that?
This is like the first person who ate an oyster.
Right. You try it. No, you try it.
So, do you think I did it? I mean, there was bungee jumping. You could jump out of planes. You could go bungee jumping out of planes and
now
then
that's
go,
weird.
And then land on your skis. I mean, whatever you want to do,
I'm thinking
you can
that's
do
not
it in
real,
Queenstown.
If, now, did and so the question is, did you participate in bungee jumping?
So did I? Well, I mean, how many times am I going to be in New Zealand? So
right.
You know, here I am.
You know, and I have to say, knowing you as long as I have, and under this situation of the cultural significance of, let's say, bungee jumping and any extreme thing like that, that I can say pretty safely there is no chance you did this.
I will show you a video.
Will you? Of?
I will show you a video, and I will send out this video to any listener who would like to see this.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I will show you a video that I took of
eating
a person,
an oyster?
Go on.
Of a person jumping off the bridge.
Okay, well, there we go.
Yeah, actually, when I was there, there's an area where you can stand, you can watch all these fools do this,
yeah.
Right?
Right.
And ever so it's fascinating. Everybody does it, right? Because you're up like 1,000 feet. You're looking into this chasm. There's a roaring river at the bottom. And people are getting all strapped up at the top. And they're throwing themselves off this ledge.
Wow.
Right? So you don't want to miss this, right?
Right.
So we're standing there. And then an announcement comes on saying, ladies and gentlemen, we want you to know that the next jumper is jumping nude.
Oh.
And we're making this announcement for those of you who might not want to watch.
Okay.
Well, you know that they're doing
more people
this
are going to show up.
Because everybody's going to turn around and watch.
Of course they are.
So, yeah, you had the option of jumping nude or not. I mean, you know, how extreme can you get? Bungee jumping is pretty extreme as it is. But then you're going to get all the stuff flapping around.
Oh, gosh.
As you fly down to
I would have to say certain women might really not want to do that. I would think they could get, you know, punched in the face or something.
And this was a woman.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, well, you could, and of course, extreme rafting. They have these rivers that flow 100 miles an hour. You know, like in the Grand Canyon, and it's
rapidly.
Mm. Yes, thank you. Yeah, and you could just buy a ticket and get on this thing and pray to God that you survived to get to the end.
Now, do I'm sure you must have to sign like a bunch of forms to jump off this. The bridge or the cliff with
you
the...
know, for as many of these adventure experiences I signed up for when I was there, I never had to sign a disclaimer.
Is that right? No,
never.
No. I wonder why.
Although maybe others do have to sign it, but I said, what the hell? I'm not signing
this. You're not.
No.
No prenup for me.
No.
Well, all right then. Okay, so we've got the southern portion.
So that's in Queenstown.
Yes.
Queenstown. Yeah. And people go there just to have these, like in the morning, I'm going to jump 1,000 feet off the cliff. And in the afternoon, I'm going to take this river boat, you know, it's going to crash me into an old gold mine somewhere. And tomorrow, then we'll go out to dinner.
Assuming there is a tomorrow.
Yeah. Right. And then tomorrow we'll do something else. Yeah. I'd like to interview, you know, some of the tourists who go to Queenstown and to do,
okay,
do all,
well,
this.
If anyone's listening to this who has gone there and done these types of things, or anyone who is actually, who maybe lives there, who's listening to this, we'd love to hear from you about this. We'd love to hear your experiences, your maybe things you've witnessed with this, or actually experienced yourself. Any of that, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, and it is a modern day tourist phenomenon, but I think there's a cultural piece to this.
Thank goodness, because we've been going a long time now, and I've been wondering about that.
And
so far, I've got a nude kiwi jumping off a bridge.
With a big egg.
With a giant egg.
A giant, yes, egg.
Yes. it's not going to be good at the bottom. That's all I can say. Omelets for everybody. While listening to this, you may think, hey, you know, I wonder, well, if you have a question like that and want to ask us, there's a couple ways you can do it. One would be through email, which is oopsculturesshow@gmail.com. That's OOPS cultureshow@gmail.com. And then there's also our handle on Twitter, which is oopsculturesshow. That's OOPS cultureshow. I know, it's not original, but it works. Okay.
It is a wonderful attraction, actually, outside of, let's see if I remember, I think it's Wellington, mm-hmm, called Zealandia, where they take you on a tour of the natural landscape, and they point out all of the unique animals, the flora and the fauna that are there. Hmm. And they're amazing. I mean, these things don't exist anywhere else. Like in Australia, you know, you have the koala. It doesn't exist anywhere else. Or the, mm-hmm, kangaroo, mm-hmm, doesn't exist anywhere else. Mm-hmm. Similar kinds of things in New Zealand, but of course smaller, because it's a smaller island. And let's be careful here. Kiwis do not like to be compared with their Aussies. I shouldn't even say cousins, because we're not cousins. We're Kiwis.
You're speaking Kiwis, meaning the people.
The people.
There.
The people. Yeah.
They are New Zealanders. Am I saying that correctly?
Ah, well, now we're getting into the cultural complexity.
Well,
and
let's
there's a lot
try
of
that
it.
For a while.
First of all, yeah, okay. So the indigenous people of the islands before the Pakehas. The Pakehas are Europeans or non-indigenous people.
Okay.
For all intents and purposes, white people, right,
okay,
who came, mm-hmm, to the islands.
The majority were, yes.
Came to the islands from the majority being, at the time, Britain, mm-hmm, right? Okay. And that only happened, you know, what was it, about 100, 150 years ago, something like that. But the indigenous people who live there are the Maori. All right. It's just like the indigenous people of Australia are the Aboriginal tribes. The Maori were tribes made up of Polynesian peoples who traveled to New Zealand and discovered the islands of New Zealand. And I believe that before the Maori got there, and there were different tribes of Polynesian peoples, but once they got to New Zealand, the Europeans who came later just referred to them as Maori, but the different Maori tribes themselves were not necessarily all of the same. Okay. And in fact, they would fight with each other. There was a lot of tribal fighting.
Oh, really?
Even before the Europeans got there, between the different Polynesian tribes, who are then described today as Maori.
Okay.
Right? And still
lumped together.
Yeah. And still, yeah. Maori defined themselves by their tribe, not necessarily by the fact that they're not European, although they are not European as
so
well.
So is this a subject matter that should be approached cautiously by outsiders?
Well, yeah, it should. I think you should approach it with humility and
sensitivity
with an open mind, mm-hmm, to question. Tell me what this history is. It's been a difficult history, mm-hmm, and it's a history it's a dialogue. It's a conversation that's still going on. This idea of how do we reconcile the Maori rights, mm-hmm, as opposed to European rights, mm-hmm, well, the Pakehas, as the Maori refer to them, right?
Yeah.
And it's a tragic story in many ways, and in many ways it mirrors so many of the stories of colonialism and indigenous peoples,
right? Sure. Mm-hmm.
But interestingly, and here's where I think the cultural piece really shines, interestingly, in New Zealand, while, you know, you can talk to individuals and there are lots of people on all sides of this argument, mm-hmm. and some of them are extreme in their positions, but in general, because of the progressivism, which I think is part of the cultural DNA of the country, the approach to resolving Maori and Pākehā interests has been one of attempts at dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
So when the Europeans came and the British colonialists essentially came and did everything possible to deceive the Maori and to take their rights and to take their lands and to marginalize them essentially.
Uh-huh.
An example of what happened was they signed a treaty called the Treaty of Waitangi. And in the Treaty of Waitangi, there were two versions. There was a Maori version and there was an English language version. And people have been studying these two versions side by side, because if you read them both, the way the words get interpreted gives both sides the right to claim things against the other that may or may not be valid or legitimate. So what the Maori did is they kind of signed away their rights, but not understanding what they were signing. Like, they signed away the steward. They saw the words in the treaty as meaning stewardship of the land, because in Maori culture, you can't own land.
Mm, sure.
You are merely a steward of the land that you live on.
Mm-hmm.
But the English version had everything to do with ownership of land.
Yeah.
Because it was coming from the British tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And the Maoris didn't know that they were signing away their ownership rights, because they didn't conceive of their role vis-a-vis the land as owners of the land.
Mm-hmm.
They were stewards of the land.
Sure.
Of course, they saw the British taking advantage of this, and the British saw the Maori as, when they claimed it, as disregarding what they had signed,
mm-hmm.
an agreement that they had signed,
mm-hmm.
giving the British the rights to administer the land.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very complicated cultural issue.
Are they currently... I know you say there is conversation. Is it they're currently dealing with this kind of relationship from the past?
Yeah, and it's difficult and it's fraught with problems.
Okay.
And every now and then it gets unpleasant.
Yeah.
But if you compare the way these issues of Aboriginal rights are attempted to be dealt with in New Zealand with the way they're dealt with in other parallel situations, other countries that had colonial traditions and indigenous peoples, the effort is in a much more collaborative direction,
mm-hmm.
generally most of the time.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I think it speaks to the progressivism of the country. So what you have now today is Maori culture playing an extremely important role in day-to-day New Zealand culture.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't say that about most other countries that are dealing with similar type situations.
Right. Yes.
And, you know, you can't, for example, you go to school in New Zealand, everybody learns Maori.
Really?
Yeah. You have to speak, you have to learn Maori as well as English.
Huh.
And Maori is the second language. Every government document is published in Maori as well as in English.
Okay.
The Maori culture is taught. Everybody understands it. And politically, the Maori hold a significant percentage of the seats in government.
Mm-hmm.
And they do so because they have organized themselves and because there's been this ongoing dialogue that allows them to have this authority.
Mm-hmm.
So they play a very significant role in everything that goes on in New Zealand, top to bottom.
Mm-hmm. Huh. That seems to be quite unusual.
Very unusual.
Yeah.
So one day I go to the Waitangi Treaty Grounds where they signed this document, which is still the foundational document of the relations between Pakeha and Maori, and is still being negotiated, you know, every time an issue comes up. And it's referred to almost the way in the U.S. we refer to the Constitution.
That's what I was going
to
say. It sounded like.
And it gets reinterpreted depending on what the issues are.
Oh, sure.
So anyway, at the Waitangi Treaty Grounds, as a visitor, you have to enter the Maori grounds, because this was Maori territory.
Okay.
And as a visitor, you always go through the greeting ceremony whenever you encounter your Maori hosts.
Mm.
So I'm standing there with a group of tourists. This is a tourist event, obviously, right? But it's done very authentically. And somebody comes out and explains what's about to happen, that we're going to be greeted by our Maori host, and that we represent visitors. And therefore, they need somebody to represent the group of visitors. And I'm with Cheryl, my wife, and she immediately pushes my hand up in the air. She says,
"Yeah, we have a volunteer."
So I kind of knew what I was getting into because I knew a little bit about Maori culture, to be humble, right? Before I actually got there, and I wasn't that excited about what I was about to encounter.
Okay.
Now
I'm interested.
And sure enough, so I step up and this door opens and this guy comes out with a spear, you know, dressed in pretty traditional clothing.
Garb, yes.
Thank you, right? And he's going to greet me, but he's going to make sure that I understand his authority and his power.
Okay.
All right, and what I have to do is I have to stand there, I have to look him in the eye, I cannot look away, and I can't laugh, for sure. Mm-hmm. I have to be absolutely stoic as he approaches me with this spear, running at me with this spear, stopping dead short right in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And then, how do I describe this? You have to see it. His eyes are bulging out.
Mm.
His mouth is wide open. He's got tattoos on his face. Mm-hmm. And his tongue is sticking out halfway down his chest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just giving me this terrifying look and this terrifying roar. And and you just stand there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he offers me it places a feather down on the ground.
Uh-huh.
And so that's an offering. So
A particular kind of feather?
I don't know. It was a kiwi feather. I don't know.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then I present a feather as well.
Mm.
And now that we've exchanged,
did you happen to have a feather with you, or did they give you one?
Yeah, they gave me a feather.
Oh, that's good.
They said you're going to need this.
Hang on to this. Try not to drop it. Yeah.
Right. And then we entered the meeting house.
Uh huh.
And at that point, supposedly, had we been involved in the traditional discussions, we would have actually been negotiating the Waitangi Treaty.
Mm.
But, you know, if you go see the All Blacks.
Yes, that's what I was just going to say.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
Which needs to be explained right now for those who aren't familiar.
Right. Okay. So rugby is the sport in New Zealand.
Right.
And, you know, because of the tradition of extreme adventure sports, they're into all the sports. But rugby, that's it. And the top team is the All Blacks. That's the national team. And they have won every Rugby World Cup since, I don't know.
They're extremely good at it.
And they're so good at it, they define the traditions of the game at this point.
Mm.
So when the All Blacks team is playing, they come out on the field, and the competing team comes out on the field, and they all line up, and they're not all Maori.
Mm.
And this is the point, you know, everybody understands this in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. They're not all Maori. A lot of them are European or even from other countries. They all line up and they do the haka. And the haka is this traditional greeting where you are in a squat position and you jump forward and you give this face and this roar and you do it all. And these are big rugby guys, right? And you do it in the face of the competing team. And you stand out there and you stomp your feet and it's like, it's overwhelming, man. It really is. Yeah. If I were on the other team, I'm done. Yeah, I'm out of here before we even start.
Well, yeah, I have seen that done. I'm not in person, but I've seen a video of it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's scary in the video, and that's quite impressive. But it's also really look forward to now when they're playing, I think both the opponent and the crowd and everyone, and I'm sure they look forward to doing it. I would think it would be a distinct advantage. It would be if I was playing them, I'll tell you that.
I think it does give you an advantage.
And I think, too, and maybe, Torin, you remember this, but I believe in the Men's World Cup, soccer, football, depending on when you're listening to this, the New Zealanders were in the Men's World Cup for soccer, weren't they, this last time? Were they?
I don't remember.
Because I seem to remember some sort of thing like that or something going on in the stands. Maybe that's what it was. There was a cheer in the stands that went through, and I'm pretty sure it was the New Zealanders.
They were doing their own haka up in the stands.
Yeah, a version of that. Yeah. Now, I may be hallucinating, or this could be, flashbacks from my drug use in college, but I think that happened. Yes? What?
Drug use in college?
You again? Vaguely familiar. It's what? Oh, did I say that out loud?
But the fact that you remember it, they say like...
Okay, I'm nowhere near correct here. In fact, this actually had to do... I'm truly hallucinating at this point.
It's a flashback.
Absolutely, it's a flashback. But it's a different kind of flashback.
Oh, that felt good.
Yeah. It's a flashback to our last island hopping episode, because it had to do with Iceland. In fact, they were the island, that country that made it to the Men's World Cup in soccer / football. It was, and they were doing the Viking thunderclap.
Oh, so this was a northern version.
Exactly.
This was a northern hemispheric version of the southern hemispheric haka.
Right. So that's being done by the crowd, not the actual players, although they may have been doing it too, if I remember correctly. I believe they were.
That's sort of like the episode.
Thank you, Torin, for saving me on that one from looking any worse than I already do.
You're welcome.
Yep, thank you.
We did an episode on the Northern Hemisphere and the Southern Hemisphere spinning around.
No, the magnetic poles. This is a real thing.
Yeah.
And we talked about it, and we should talk more about it. It's a real thing. It will have massive cultural impacts.
And I think what's happening in New Zealand. See, because New Zealand is as far south as you could... Except for a few islands with some penguins further
hanging
south.
Around in Antarctica, yes.
Yeah, it's as far south as you can go on any major piece of land in the world, and the next stop is Antarctica. So in Queenstown, for example, they actually talk about next stop, Antarctica.
Okay.
As one of the adventure experiences you can go on.
No, thank you. Wow. Although that could be very fascinating, really. But I think... The interesting thing, too, I believe, and this may be just me being the freakish person that I am, but I seem to be claiming that as some sort of good thing.
Support you on that?
So many. Yeah, why not? So many. For so many years. I always seem to picture New Zealand as being a warm weather country because of it being south of here.
Well, I was down there in the equivalent of our summertime in the Northern Hemisphere, which means it was winter.
The Northern Hemisphere. So
it was winter when I was there, which was, by the way, really weird. And it always is whenever I have to travel in this direction. You know, I'm here in the northeast of the United States in the summer, and it's hot, it's humid, but I'm packing all my winter clothes because I'm going to need them when I get down there. And exactly that. I mean, Queenstown was freaking cold while I was there. So you would do all this stuff, including bungee jump nude in the cold. It was cold when I was there.
That has some real ramifications.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's not really a war. It's not It's warm.
It has a real climate, variable climate.
I think what your perception is that it's of an outdoors place. And
it's an outdoors place.
And
it's, I mean, I'm talking something that's really simplistic and not really very intelligent. It's just a concept of it being south, and south to a person who lives in the northern hemisphere, farther up in the northern hemisphere, south means warm.
Right. As you go further south in New Zealand, it actually...
It gets colder.
It gets colder.
Yeah.
Right. At least in the wintertime when I was there. Yeah.
And I would imagine that if you grow up in the southern hemisphere like that, in Australia and New Zealand and in other areas that are like that.
Down under.
Down under.
And everybody claims that title, by the way.
That whole area.
Yeah. The Kiwis are down under and Aussies are down under.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's that your take on how the world works is going to be north is warmer and south is colder, as opposed to in the northern hemisphere where we feel the opposite.
Based on your experience, right? Yeah. So, you know, school vacation there is January.
Right.
January, February, because that's summertime.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. So I killed that whole conversation. Okay, listen, the way to get hold of us is oopsculture show@gmail.com, and our Twitter handle is oopsculture show. Whether this is the first episode or the third episode or whatever episode that you've listened to, if you're still listening at this point, I think you might like this. And if you do, you should really subscribe. Because if you subscribe, these things will just show up for you, and you can listen to them whenever you want to. That's the best way to go, really. Honestly, I know what I'm talking about. All right, so just subscribe through iTunes or through wherever you get your podcasts from. But do it today, okay? Subscribe. Thank you. You already talked about the geographical change. Is there a great climate change that goes along with that?
Not great, but there are microclimates throughout.
Okay.
Because, for example, the South Island has the what they call the Great Transalpine Range.
Yeah.
So you go high up in those elevations,
you're going to really get
really cold.
There.
Yeah.
So let me see if we can put this in perspective for those of us who have not actually been to the place. The size of the islands, the entire country, would be relative to another country that we might be familiar with also. Do you have that familiarity as to where it might go? Like, for instance, if it was put next to the northeastern United States, would it take us down to the Carolinas? Would it take us down to Florida?
It would go further. I think it would be like from New England down to Florida.
Okay.
But that like we're talking about both islands.
Both islands, right. The whole country.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the thrilling thing to do is you can take a ferry from the North Island, from the southern part of the North Island to the northern part of the South Island.
Okay.
As you work your way down.
I'm getting out my compass now.
Right? As you work your way down, you can take a ferry there. And the water there is really rough because it's the Pacific Ocean traveling through this little channel.
Sure.
And So you take it. We didn't take the ferry. We flew. And everybody said, you want to fly. You
right.
don't want to take the ferry. But
I think
I
kind of
wanted
move.
To take the ferry. But
yeah,
I didn't
sure
take
you
the
did.
Ferry.
Okay.
Just well, like I wanted to bungee jump.
Right. We'll give you both.
Others did it.
But I'm sure Cheryl held you back from doing that. And the wise woman she is.
Despite my great effort.
I'm sure. Yeah. Yes. Hold me back. I'm not touching you. Yes. Go ahead.
I do recommend that one of the more thrilling things I think anybody can do, and you don't have to be a bungee jumper to do it, is when you get to the South Island, take a ride on the Transalpine Express from, Wellington, across to the, from the East Coast, going south across to the West Coast.
This is on the Southern Island.
On the South Island.
In the mountain range.
In the mountain
range.
You get on
a train.
It is a train. And the train has an open car.
Hmm.
So as you get into the mountain range, and it gets wilder and wilder, and it really does get wild, you can step out onto this open car and look down these chasms that you just hope the train doesn't tilt any one direction.
Yeah.
It's a thrilling, thrilling adventure.
I'm sure they've never had a problem at all. I'm sure everything has been perfectly fine.
You know, I don't know that,
right.
But I would kind of think that they figured that one out.
Well, hopefully, yeah, at this point. But but you trial and error often does that over a period of time, but it's been there a while, right?
It was originally done as a commercial venture because they had to transport goods and services and
sure.
gold, and there's a lot of mining and things like mm. you know, all of mm. that going back, you know, 100 plus years. Now, here's another interesting. The Maori themselves didn't get to the islands until only 600 years ago.
Oh, really?
Before that, as I understand it, nobody was there. It was just the kiwis and a lot
the
of other animals.
The actual kiwis. Yeah, the birds. Along with those other strange
And all the other animals yeah. and all the other flora.
Mm-hmm.
But no human population. Mm. It was the Polynesian tribes that got
there. Came across
which
is a fascinating
south.
Subject also. Yeah. But not what we're doing today.
And they had to because they were fighting with each other. Island by island.
Right.
And they also were looking for land to expand to. And they sure. went south and discovered these two islands, which, by the way, even today in New Zealand, we refer to the country as New Zealand, but most of the people know the country as Aotearoa.
Okay.
Which is Maori name for the country.
For the whole thing.
For New Zealand.
North and south.
It is Aotearoa.
Okay. Interesting. So besides the tourism that they have in New Zealand, is there another way, and is there a cultural aspect to what kind of livings they make in New Zealand?
Well, I was there for work, so I was fortunate enough to tour around and enjoy myself and pretend that I was going to bungee jump and do things like
right,
that.
Right.
But I was essentially there to do some work helping different teams of people from all over the world who have mm-hmm. emigrated mm-hmm. to New Zealand work with each other and also work with the Maori. So we did a lot of work in that regard. And I would say that it's a very modern, westernized society. Mm. So you're not going to experience differences that are significant if you come from a modern, westernized society, right? Mm-hmm. But it has these very, very unique elements to it, mm. like the way the Maori and the Pakeha deal with each other.
And I, if I'm not mistaken, and I probably am, they were very much... enamored with the Brits and the UK.
They being?
The New Zealanders, and mainly not the Maori, but the people who came in from there and have continued. They have a relationship still.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's one of the things that they use to distinguish themselves from their Australian cousins.
Right.
You know, when you think of the history of Australia, these were convicts for the most part.
A large percentage.
I'm making a broad generalization here, but it was started by the Brits really not knowing what to do.
Shipping
them off to the furthest corner of the world.
Right.
And so these guys... they're convicts. They're not the highest level of society, should we say.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of all in this thing together.
Right.
And so in Australia, there's this sense of very strong leveling. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to be an average bloke and you got to fit in with all the mates.
Mm-hmm.
And if you try to stand out in any way, you're going to be a tall poppy and you're going to get your head cut off.
Mm-hmm.
And so... It's a much more down to earth, or the valuing of down to earth kinds of things is much more a critical part of Australian culture.
Mm-hmm.
New Zealanders didn't come to New Zealand as convicts.
Mm.
These were people who were seeking economic opportunity and in many cases had the resources to be able to start a venture
mm-hmm.
and take advantage of an opportunity because it was a British colony.
Mm-hmm.
So they came with resources. They came with a much different attitude. And therefore, there's, I think, a greater affinity with the more traditional British values
mm-hmm.
that benefited those in society who had the opportunity to take advantage of those benefits.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the case in Australia.
Right.
And therefore, there's a much more distinct and sometimes harsh distinction between Australians and Brits.
Sure. Now, with other things we've talked about in culture, and there's many aspects of culture, of course, but I'm just thinking in contemporary society, the treatment and of women in New Zealand?
They have a female prime minister right now.
Okay.
Who managed to handle a very, very horrible
and
situation.
Delicate situation, right?
Very,
there.
Very
yes.
well. Despite yeah. anything that you might feel, and most New Zealanders have lots of different feelings. I mean, it's politics, sure. and everybody has their different opinions, you know, as to whether or not she's doing a good job in this field or that area or whatever. But they all, for the most part, admired the way she handled that.
Yeah. And that's a. So there's another aspect of a country being led by a woman. And is she the first? And it's a parliamentary system. There,
she's a prime minister.
So
yes.
She's a prime minister. So, and do you know if she's the first prime minister or not? Or should we?
A female prime minister?
Female prime minister.
I believe so, but we'll have to check on that. Torin, can you check on that?
Can take a look.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. Yeah, we had to wake him up.
Sorry to interrupt your reverie over there.
He was trying to crawl under the blanket over here in the corner of the studio again.
Sure.
Yeah, equality is fundamental. You know.
And do you know in the workplace, is that something
absolutely.
Men and women?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. And look, I'm sure there are differences and there are glass ceilings.
I'm sure.
But and if you speak with women, you know, they will explain issues that I'm probably not privy to. Mm-hmm. But in general, again, you know, when you look at you take a world scale and a world view.
Yeah.
New Zealand is extremely progressive in these areas.
Mm. Okay. Very interesting. It is now. Would you say they are similar in the way that England handles those issues, or do you think that because of their ties to Britain and where they came from, and as you just described, do you think they follow them, or do you think they've actually gone more progressive than Britain?
No, I think they've gone further.
Mm, okay,
much further.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think things that still are debated in Britain and certainly in the United States.
So, if you're coming into New Zealand from another country, whether it's the U.S. or the Europe or Asia or wherever, and you're coming in there, your beliefs toward you have to look at it in that fashion that men and women are basically being treated equally. And you have to look at it that way. And so, like, your greetings and things like that reflect that? You are just shaking hands or...
Absolutely. And remember, it's a very young culture.
Mm.
And it's a very modern culture.
Okay.
And it, along with its progressivism. Mm-hmm. And it's very Western.
Mm-hmm.
So... You don't know necessarily who you're speaking with, right?
Even
you may be speaking with Maoris who mm-hmm. understand Western culture, but also hold on to their traditions. So everyone is fairly informal.
Okay.
But you do have to do things with respect, that mm-hmm. you are still a visitor and they are still your hosts and you're still their guest. And they do have these issues that like all of us, all cultures have their issues that they're still working through. Mm-hmm. And you have to be respectful of that.
Great. Okay. Tori, have you got something for us there?
I do. So Jenna Shipley became New Zealand's first female prime minister from 1997 to 1999.
Oh.
And then Helen Clark was the first elected female prime minister in 1999.
So Ms. Shipley became it through
replacing someone
who left office
for some
reasons we're not sure of.
Yep.
Okay, because
mm-hmm.
you've done inadequate research.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. And so do we know where the current prime minister ranks in that? Is she like third or?
She's third. Then.
She's third.
So this tradition is not even new.
Not new.
It goes back even.
And we're going back
20 plus years.
Yeah, almost a quarter of a century. Yeah.
Right.
So they were already on it.
Yes, as opposed to where we're sitting right now in our country, in the United States, where we have yet to accomplish that as a leader of our country.
And so much more.
And many other things. But for another day. In fact, in another day is where we're headed now, because we're going to say, and what do we say to New Zealand when we leave? Do you know? Do you know what what goodbye would be over there? Is it? It's. I was going to say aloha, and I don't believe that's correct, but that's a specific island term, so maybe it's closer than I think. If you get any out, you're looking very blankly at me. Did I stump you here? You did say goodbye to these people, right? Didn't you?
What you say is goodbye, and they wave and they say goodbye.
Goodbye. Get goodbye, out. Goodbye. Go home.
Interesting.
It was not the right accent right there.
No.
And I'm not even going to try. No.
Now the Kiwi accent is different from the Aussie accent.
It's very
and
the Aussie, yeah.
And they're both very different from the British accent.
Right.
And they're nothing like America speak.
Right. No. So we're gonna leave the islands of New Zealand for now.
Aotearoa.
Aotearoa. Okay. And we may be back. I'd love to be back. It's intriguing. Sounds like an intriguing place. I'd actually like to visit very much. So anyone out there who would like to invite me to come visit and speak. Maybe we could bring the show there. We could bring the podcast there.
Let's do that.
Let's
do that.
We would love to come and speak at your conference or whatever out there. If you're out there looking for somebody, my gosh, you've listened this long to this podcast.
Let me get in touch with some of my colleagues there.
All right.
And we'll see if they say, oh, God, I thought we had the last of you the last time.
Well, if you do invite us, I'll make two promises, one for my co-host here that he will, in fact, bungee jump. And
in the nude.
And I will I'll do it in the nude. I'll do it in the nude. If it's summer, we have to go in the summer. No.
I'm making that
avert
clear.
Your eyes. Don't look.
Yeah, then I won't be anywhere near
people mind. Turning into pillars of salt for you Bible fans.
Bible fans.
Well,
all right, so I don't think there's any particular goodbye tradition,
okay.
But Maoris, when they greet you, have a greeting tradition in addition to the haka and the sword.
I was
going to
say,
and
we did the haka already.
And the terrifying sticking
there's
out
more
of
than
the
that?
Tongue. Once all that is done, then you approach each other and you press noses, the front of the noses against each other.
Okay.
The idea being that now we can trust each other and I can smell you. You can smell me, which kind of takes us to what you say when we leave the podcast.
It does.
So you are doing a Maori traditional farewell minus the nose.
Well, I'm doing the nose. We just don't have a video aspect of the podcast, at least not yet. So you cannot see me do the nose, because that's exactly why I've done that each time, is about the Maori and my feeling toward you, the listener, who I feel like I can smell you.
And we can touch each other's
what?
Nose.
What? What?
So you knew all about this before.
Not in a negative way.
You knew all about this before.
All along, I've just been laying in the weeds here.
You
that's
have,
right.
You have just led me on to just say all, and this was your plan?
All along, I've been laying in the weeds, and you don't want to smell me after I've been laying in the weeds for a long period of time.
Well, thanks.
But yes, absolutely. That's where it comes from. Uh huh.
Uh huh.
Nothing else.
Yeah,
right.
Sure. Uh-huh. Dean, I had a question for you. You talked about kind of things you did and saw in the South Island.
Yeah, we talked a lot about the South Island.
Yeah.
Were there any kind of notable, and if not, that's fine, any notable things you did or saw on the North Island?
It's the North Island where most of the population is.
Mm.
And that's where the commercial city is, Auckland.
Auckland,
and most people,
yes,
when they go to New Zealand, you go to Auckland.
Heading to Auckland.
Yeah.
Right.
But even there, they do bungee jumping.
Well, I'm sure.
They have this huge building in the center of the city.
Oh,
and it's a small city. And you go to the top of the building, and it's one of these places where you walk out on the outside, and they have glass, so you look down.
Oh, yes, you can look down through.
And you're scared to death because you're looking at the ground through your feet or something.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also bungee jump off the building.
Wow.
In the center of town.
Yeah.
In Auckland. You've been walking down the street, you know, you're going to work and somebody jumps
Boing.
And falls right in front of you. It's like, oh, it's a
Hello.
Bungee jumper.
Okay.
Now, there are wonderful things to do and see in the North Island, but most folks are there for business, and business is very modern, very Western. Auckland is a big. It's not a big city, but it is a major city, mm-hmm. and but you can just take a little boat ride out to some of the many many islands off the coast of the right off outside of Auckland Bay, and it's like another world. You're visiting these beautiful outlier islands where the life is remarkably rural and quite beautiful.
Mm. Wonderful. And I'm assuming in the Auckland area, again, we talked a little bit about climate, but in the Auckland area, there is a somewhat more temperate climate in
depending on the year, once again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The time of year.
Now, yeah. Auckland's in the north on the North Island. If you work your way down south from the north on the North Island.
Yeah.
You get into these other different climates, and again, this is where you have a lot of volcanic activity. So just at the center toward the south of the North Island, you have a big volcanic area, and it's also a major Maori population.
In that area,
okay. Yes, which is quite fascinating. So you visit what were originally Maori settlements, mm-hmm. but are now also major towns.
Right.
And there's one in particular where there are pots of bubbling mud as you walk through the town everywhere, and people heat their homes.
Is this geothermal?
Yeah, from geothermal activity. Mm-hmm. Right. And it may have been one of the reasons why the Maori settled there originally, because there was a lot of heat and energy. All the energy from that area comes from geothermal. Mm. It's a fascinating place. From a cultural perspective, a lot of the British traditions, the Maori did adopt over the years, right? Because there were advantages for them to do so. And also for survival with the Europeans, they had to.
Sure.
And so there's a particular church I remember visiting in this area that is fundamentally a Maori Christian church, but the congregation is mainly Maori. And they have these beautiful stained glass windows. And there's a picture of Christ dressed in a Maori chief's outfit.
Why not?
And the church wouldn't mind as long as they get their followers.
Just show up on Sunday.
Exactly.
Okay. Very interesting. Yeah. And the whole geothermal aspect is an aspect that the rest of the world, or many parts of the rest of the world, when we spoke about Iceland, that was something there as well. Am I right?
Yeah. So maybe there's something about the closer you get to the poles.
I would think that might have something to do with it.
Or is that a correlation, or is that a cause?
Well, I think a geologist might be able to tell us that there are real reasons for that. Yeah. I just think that's probably a little bit the way the Earth is structured.
Is that why the poles are going to flip, Tom?
Well, the magnetic poles are flipping, not the actual poles.
When is this going to happen?
Well, some people are saying it could happen in the relatively near future. And by that, I mean still within our lifetimes, which is not going to be that much longer. especially you. No. It's
hey.
Well, what? Oh, you were listening. I promise this: the next podcast, we will go
before the
more
next
into
podcast.
Depth.
The magnetic poles are going to flip. Is
they
that
may
what you're going to
That's
promise
what I'm going
us?
To. Yeah, maybe. Could happen. So be careful.
Who knows?
Because your compasses are going to go whack job.
This means
you.
I'm going to have to put the headphones on so that the sound comes through my other ear.
And you're going to have to stand on your head. Uh huh. But it won't seem like you're standing on
because
your head.
Because the poles have flipped.
Oh, sure. I guarantee that's an accurate prediction. Mm-hmm. All right. Well,
I had
you got more over
you,
there?
Well, you
trying to pretend you're actually doing something
for
this?
Oh, wow. You said you had two promises before, and you mentioned one. Do you remember what the other one was?
Well, it was... Yeah, thanks a lot. I did. Actually, I did mention it. It was very brief, and I went by it very quickly. Very brief being the appropriate thing, because Dean said that he would actually bungee jump naked, and I was saying I would bungee jump naked, so... that I would do that if it was summer. That was the
so
second.
Those are the
Dean,
two
I offered
promises.
Dean to bungee jump, and then I and offered that I would bungee jump naked, but he jumped in with naked also. So we might do a double in the buff.
I'd say of all the these adventure experiences that you can have in Queenstown. Mm-hmm. If I ranked them and said I would do them all,
yeah,
the one that I maybe most likely might do would be the whitewater rafting thing.
I would definitely.
So
do that.
If yeah, you do that. If yeah. you yeah. bungee jump, I'll whitewater.
Okay.
Not while you bungee jump.
Well,
though.
You can do it while I bungee jump. I don't
bungee
care.
Bungee jump right into the raft.
I can do that.
With
I can
skis.
Naked.
With skis.
Naked.
And then keep
Here's
going.
A question. Can you bungee jump in Auckland off the building naked?
I don't know, but I'm sure at a price, yeah.
Somebody will
probably.
Do it. Yeah. Well, if you invite us down, as we mentioned before, if you invite us down to do our podcast down there, those things will happen. They will happen. And if they don't, there's major consequences. Oh, yeah, remember Major Consequences? I think he had a TV show for a while.
And Sergeant Truther.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
I think we're done.
We're getting out of here. You're still Dean Foster.
And you're still Tom Peterson.
I am. Thank you, Torn, for being in studio.
You're welcome.
And this was a fascinating look into a particular culture, which is what we do here all the time, because we are...
Oops!
Your
culture's
showing.
And in the words of the Maori, smell ya. Just want to bother you one last time to say we're a brand new podcast here at Oops, Your Culture's Showing, and we could really use your help by subscribing to the podcast. And not to mention that if you hung around this long and you liked what you heard, well, this makes it just easier for you to get the podcast. They'll pop up for you whenever they're released, so you can listen to them on your phone or your computer or however you listen to them. And it's easy to get, too. Just subscribe using iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts from. It really isn't hard, and we could really use your support. So from all of us here at Oops, Your Culture's Showing, thanks.